Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everybody, welcome to Near and Queer to My Heart. I'm your host, Amanda G. Always excited to be here. Man, in the last 2 weeks since we've last talked, so much has happened. I guess I just want to talk right now about just how inspired I am by everything around me. Like, I'm in such a good space where everything I do, everything I see is just inspiring. Yesterday, I went with my girlfriend and a friend who's in town in New Orleans to the New Orleans Museum of Art. They have an exhibit there called A Queen Within, and it's got all this wonderful, beautiful fashion. I'll post some pictures. It's an amazing exhibit, and it focuses on a queen within, what it means to be a fucking queen. There's seven archetypes of a queen: Mother Earth, sage, magician, enchantress, explorer, heroine, and thespian. I mean, there's a part of that in all of us, and I identified with so much of it, and I just left there in a good fucking mood, you know, and it almost made me want to go shopping. Not quite there, but was pretty close to being like, maybe I should branch out from jeans and a t-shirt. That's how inspiring it was. But it's been good. And then, so I did that yesterday afternoon, went out, did a show at House of Blues in the French Quarter, did a comedy show, and then headed over to the Miss Gay pageant at the Oz. And that was also amazing and inspiring. These beautiful, beautiful queens just doing their dances and their gowns and their makeup, and everything's on point, and it's amazing. And last year's reigning champion, I guess we'll call it, the last year's winner. I'm not good at pageant shit. Come on. Like I said, jeans and t-shirt here. But they're amazing. And last year's pageant winner, Lana O'Day, came and she did a couple of performances. And in the middle, she talked and opened up. And without any sort of prompting, was just saying, you know, that she has depression and anxiety. And that drag is what really pushes her through. And drag is what, you know, gets her up in the day and makes her want to do things. And I just found that so inspiring. Because some days, yeah, you don't feel like getting on stage. And sometimes it's not even stage. Sometimes you don't feel like talking to people, like going to work, ordering a coffee, you know, that could just be too much. And just knowing that somebody who's out there on a stage performing, doing drag, they've put their makeup and their wig and their hair, or they're doing stand-up and it's just them in jeans and a t-shirt doing stand-up, but they're putting themselves out there, and that it's not as easy as it looks. And to know that they're going through the same process that you might be going through with and identifying. And I just think it's so important. The only thing I didn't get, though, is the gay pageant had no swearing, and I don't know why that's the rules, because fuck that. There ended up being, I mean, you can't have drag queens and not say bitch. Like, it can't happen, and it didn't happen. It didn't happen, but don't tell the officials. I swear it did happen. We do have some good news around here at Near and Queer to My Heart, though. We have a sponsor. We have a real sponsor. I don't know if y'all have listened to the last 11 episodes that we've had, but at the end of every episode, when we do our thank yous, we made up sponsors because we were like, fuck it, we don't have any sponsors. We're just going to make this shit up. But then some real sponsor approached us, and we were so excited. Also, you know, I got to use their product, and their product's amazing, and I do stand behind it because I also was worried. You know, you start thinking you're doing this podcast, and you're like, well, what if this, and what if this, and, you know, what if you get a sponsor, but it's, you know, some shit you don't want. You know, like, what if Pepsi wants to sponsor me, but I'm a Coke girl? Like, what do I do? I'm not either. Don't, you know, Pepsi, you're welcome to sponsor us. But just an example, like, what, you know, what do? You'd love to have a sponsor, but you got to stand behind that shit. And I'll tell you, I do stand behind this. Studio Headphones. It's Sudio Headphones. And they sent us, they let me pick out the ones I wanted. I picked out the Regent. It's their premium on-ear model. They have impeccable clarity in the instrumental tones and well-balanced ambient sound, 24 plus hours of active battery life. They're Bluetooth, or you have a plug, you can plug them right in, and they're perfect for podcast recording. I use them in the episode coming up, so they're fucking for real. I love it. They're easy to use. I have other headphones. I won't say the company of headphones, but they, for some reason, there's a piece when I open up the headphones and put them on it that my hair gets caught in it. And so when I, you know, I love to have the big head. My big thing with big headphones in the region are those big, you know, nice headphones, which I love. I love because I do, this is what I do. You don't have to do this. This is a personal thing I do. When I get on a plane, regardless of if I have music in, I have fucking headphones on. Don't talk to me. Don't ask me to hold your kid. I don't know why. A lot of people, they always want me to hold their kids. And I'm not interested in that. But if I have the noise-canceling headphones, if you have the little headphones, the earbuds, people don't always get the message. And there's always that guy that wants to tell you about all his great accomplishments and, you know, gets really disappointed when you mention your girlfriend or gets really excited when you mention your girlfriend. Either way, none of those conversations are interesting to me. So whenever I'm on an airplane, I have headphones on regardless of the sound coming out of them. And these ones don't take my hair out. My other ones definitely have come home with a few pieces of hair missing. So these ones are amazing. The sound is fucking clear. The Bluetooth thing is awesome too, because who wants to deal with wires? It's great. And this company, they're an amazing company. They're worldwide. They do free shipping worldwide. And their goal, they want to revolutionize the way that people see headphones. It's not just a tech device, but an accessory. So the headphone market now can offer you one of two things, style or tech. And they're like, fuck it, we're gonna do both. They actually hooked us up with a discount. The discount is Near and Queer, which will give you 15% off. I'll post a link directly for the discount on our website, on our Facebook. We don't have a website. On our Facebook page and Instagram. If you're not following us on Facebook or Instagram, it's Near and Queer to My Heart. Facebook, Instagram. We might get a Twitter going because I do love to talk some shit on Twitter. But yeah, and it's studio.com, SUDIO.com. So check it out. I'm so inspired right now. Everything's so inspiring. I just love when the universe lines up, you know? And the interview that we're doing, also the universe has lined up for it. This guy, I mean, he's the reason that I got into everything that I ended up getting into. I was doing stand-up already, and I had always considered, you know, trying to host a show. I'd hosted an open mic at one point that crashed and burned quite miserably, but I had a great time doing it, and I'd been kind of looking for something else. And then Michael Folk, who you'll hear more about in a little bit, came to New Orleans with his show Greetings from Queer Mountain, which we've talked about before. It's a queer storytelling show, and he ran it in Austin at the time, and I just was amazed with it. And they did it in New Orleans, and I'm like, I need to be a part of this so badly. And it just kind of happened, you know? And it was so fortuitous that he came into my life. And he's just been everywhere he goes. He's in New York now. He got Greetings from Queer Mountain going in New York. Also, Queer Film Theory 101, another show he does. He's moving to the Bay Area soon. He's going to start doing the same thing. I mean, he's out there doing his thing, and I love it. And I just love hearing more about him. So hopefully you'll enjoy, you know, talking with Michael too. So let's get to it. Here's Michael Folk. How you doing?
Hi, I'm good. I'm recording this from my bed, and I don't know if there's a better way to be. I'm so comfortable right now.
Yeah, we're doing a early morning. Woke up Saturday morning. I got my coffee early, and you know, this is kind of relaxing, actually. I usually do them after work or, you know, so I was at a couple festivals. I was doing them in between shows at festivals, which was a little stressful, you know, to time that. But I have all day.
Yeah, for sure. No, this is nice because, well, I normally move my mic to like a more, I guess, professional area to record where I'm like, I'm sitting at a desk. But then today I realized that my windowsill near my bed has like a lip on it that's like perfect for attaching the mic to. And I was like, I am going to record this shit from my bed. I'm going to be like in a comfy bed with a blanket. It's very nice.
Well, I wanted to talk a bit about how Greetings from Queer Mountain started. And then how did you get the name for that?
Sure. I mean, I think most of the things in it were sort of collaborative. The reason why it started was because Ralphie and I wanted to book a queer stand-up show, and we were having some trouble because it just felt like we could maybe book one lineup, but there weren't enough queer stand-ups that we knew about for us to continue booking it. And so we were like, that doesn't work. If we want to run a queer show, we have to expand what the queer show can be. And so that's when we turned it into like sort of a themed storytelling show. And the name, I think that that was me. I'm obsessed with naming things, like from like improv troupes to podcasts to shows. Like I think about it so much. And Greetings from Queer Mountain was actually a really natural one for like something that would get across that it was a queer show, but it wasn't going to be like queer comedy silly showcase. Like I wanted something that was able to be sort of like tell you what the show was, but also have a little, like, it's a little fancy. It has a little zhuzh to it.
Yeah, no, I like it. We just call it Queer Mountain or QM, and like, it's kind of got that ring to it. But yeah, no, I love it. Like, next time I get a pet, I'm going to have you name it.
Well, you know, do you know about my game? Speaking of pet names, this is so important, and you can do this in New Orleans. You can do it really in any city that you walk around more than you drive. But every time you see a dog out on the street, it's meant to be played with a partner, right? With a friend or somebody. But every time you see a dog on the street, give it a first and a last name, and then whoever you're with has to say what their job is. And it's so fun. Just every time you see a dog, just be like, that is Charlotte McGillicuddy, and she is a nail technician, and like you can't be wrong. It's like, it's so improv gamey, but it makes walking around New York so fun.
What's your favorite one that you've discovered?
Oh no, there's so many good ones. Well, I'm partial to like really chunky short last names for dogs, so like Catherine Skunk, and you know, she makes rocket ship parts, and I don't know, they're just it's very silly.
if you could find a way to, I mean I guess people write poetry on the street, so maybe you could offer that service for them. Bring it to the people, Michael.
I need a side hustle. That'd be a good one.
Growing up, and it's a job that, because the digital media doesn't exist anymore, my dream job was, if somebody had an album that was coming out, was I got to pick the order of the songs.
Ooh.
And I was always like, even in my head when I was practicing this, like as a kid, I'd be like, oh, this song order is so wrong, and here's what I would do. I feel like it was this high-stress job. Somebody, like, above me was yelling at me, like, no, 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 that's all wrong, and you've messed it up for everybody, and it's their experience forever. But I thought that was such an important thing, like the way an album had songs from beginning to end, I thought that, you know, had some sort of meaning. And now everything's digital, and people are like, what's an album? And these kids are like, CDs, those are stupid.
I'm sure someone still kind of has that job. I love that in your fantasy, your job was hard. Like, in your fantasy, someone was, you had a mean boss.
And yeah. I'm always the hardest on myself. Even in my dreams, I'll have these weird things like that happen. And I'm like, what? This is my dream. I should be taking the lead on this.
That seems like something that's like something to unpack in therapy, is like you create mean bosses for yourself.
I know. And I'm not even the boss in this. Like, what's your dream job? Your dream job could be anything. In my dream job, I had a boss that was tough.
That's very funny.
So when I met you, I want to say it was 3 or 4 years ago, you were living in Austin. You're in New York now, right?
I am currently in New York, yes.
And you're gonna be in San Francisco soon?
I'm moving to Oakland, the Oakland area, in like July or August.
How'd you get to Austin? When did you get to Austin?
I grew up in Austin, or just outside of Austin, like when me and my mom first moved there, and I was like three, maybe. We lived in Pflugerville with my grandparents, and then I went to school in Round Rock, which is, it's just like a suburb of Austin, but it's just like, it's like 15 minutes outside of like Austin proper, and so where we went all the time was to Austin. But I grew up in like a little bit more neighborhoody area, and I just lived there with my mom and went to school and did all of that. And then the Austin area is interesting because it has so many things that make you want to stay there that every time you think about leaving or moving, you're like, well, it's affordable. It has cool city stuff. It's relatively progressive. It has really good food. And so I was like kind of able to like just operate out of there for a long time. But eventually I got to the point where I was like, I need to live somewhere else at some point.
Yeah, no, I think Austin's beautiful. Are you an outdoors person? Because every time I go there, I am forced to kayak.
I am outdoorsy. I've never been much of a sports person, but I love being in the woods or on a little boat or like swimming. Really, really my main outdoorsiness is swimming. I could swim every single day for my entire life and like not be annoyed.
The last time I was there, I went to Barton Springs. I'm sure you've been there like a million times. It was so cold.
It's very cold.
I'm such a baby with outdoor stuff. I'm like, it's cold. There's bugs. There's a hill. It's too much. It's too much.
Well, yeah, there's so many. The bugs in New Orleans are so much more intense.
Yeah, I hate them. I hate them. I don't go outside. I don't even go on my patio.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I get it. I also love being inside, but there's something like. The thing that New York definitely lacks is, like, when you try to go outside, you got to go outside the city. Or if you want to get away from, like, the street, you go outside the city. Or you can, like, kind of go to Prospect Park or or Central Park. But it's anytime it's nice outside, those are just packed with so many tourists. So you're not really, like, getting any sort of, like, alone nature time.
I feel like, because I lived in New York from 2005 to 2008. And there were some things, I sometimes love just being around, like if I was alone and I was walking in a crowd, I just didn't feel alone. But what I hated too, there's a few places I thought I discovered as like, oh, this park is like a park that nobody goes to. And then within 6 months, everybody's going there. I remember one park I really liked, they got Wi-Fi in the park and then it was over.
Why do you need Wi-Fi in the park?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I didn't need it, but everyone else, then they were coming to that. And especially in like, I think that was like 06. That was when not every place had Wi-Fi. That's when Starbucks still, you know, didn't have Wi-Fi. So like people would go to Starbucks, get their coffee and then go to my park.
That's so weird. I mean, I guess I'm definitely on my phone all over the place, but it's weird to imagine I'm going to go to this park and then, I don't know, maybe that's nice. Like I'm going to get some work done, but I don't know. I go a little, whenever I go to the park, I go a little bit more analog and I bring a paper book. I know that's very archaic of me, but
I love paper books. I'm still not ready to let them go.
I'm reading such a good series right now. It's the Inheritance trilogy by N.K. Jemisin. It's like fantasy, but like with like sexy polyamorous gods and like young women of color who have to like stand up and save their people. It's really good.
Oh, that sounds awesome. I need more book recommendations. I get is podcast recommendations these days, which I appreciate because I'm currently obsessed with My Favorite Murder, which, you know, now that I discovered it 117 episodes in, I have like that's all I need and I'm not going to read books now.
Yeah. Oh, wait, have we talked about this before? Are you comic book nerdy at all?
A little bit.
My favorite podcast on the face of the earth is Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men. And it's this podcast with this... At the beginning of the podcast, they were a couple and they were both queer. But now they've separated and one of the people in the couple transitioned. But they still do the podcast together. And they just go through the entire X-Men history and just talk about it with like sort of like a queer progressive perspective on what was happening culturally at the time and what's happening in the issues of the comic books. And it's so good. They're like really funny and it's really silly and weird. I recommend it to everybody.
You know, that's interesting because X-Men does have like a lot of historical shit that they, you know, like Wolverine and the different wars that are happening. And so that'd be, you know, cool to see someone who, and I appreciate too, a lot of podcasts are well researched. So I can listen to an hour podcast and somebody's done 10 hours of research and it's nice to just have that, you know, accessible.
Absolutely. This one, it basically is like you get all of the plot elements of what's happening. So like I've definitely used it to like as like you can – there's a lot of issues they talk about that I have not read that I understand the plots of them now without having read them. And so it's like you don't have to be a massive fan of the comic book series to have fun with the podcast. But I digress.
Yeah, no, but sometimes things get, like, too nerdy, you know, and I can do that, too. There's certain things that I'm obsessed with that I will get down to, you know, this episode and this minute this happens, and oh, this character really meant this because I know this because I read this art, you know, you can go down that rabbit hole. But then for somebody who's never seen it, you're not going to get them to watch it or to listen to it or to absorb, you know, or to read it if you're just nerding out on it and they're like, I don't know what you're saying, so I'm just going to wait for you to stop, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not like that at all, which is great. Like, they really do a good job of, like, talking you through every aspect of it, and so it's, like, easy to understand. But anywho, now it's just become like a recommendation episode.
Were you a theater kid in high school?
Absolutely. I was such a theater kid.
Is that where, did you always want to perform, or was it like you got to high school and they had a tryout and you were like, I should do this?
I think that since I was little, like, I've always been performing in some way. I mean, you can make the sort of like performing little boyness, performing what I thought a little boy was supposed to be, performing heterosexuality. But then more so, I was an only child with a single mom, and there was a lot of adults around all the time. So the way that I made my presence feel necessary to me was by entertaining the people around me. So I was definitely like sort of that precocious, like, did he just say that, little kid? I try to be cute and silly and funny and like kind of sassy. And so it was always just kind of part of what was happening for me. And then whenever I got to middle school, I was really into theater and I lived in the theater classroom pretty much. And then same with high school. And it was always some version of performing. Yeah.
In high school, what kind of did plays? Were you doing sketches? Were you trying stand up then? Or was that just like the theater life?
I was doing plays, but me and my friend Aaron Tongay and my friend Don Roberts and some of our other friends, Brad Bonham and some other people, we were doing sketches, but we didn't know we were doing sketches necessarily. I remember we filmed and made like a Blair Witch parody at one point, and we're constantly doing like weird, dumb things that were really fun and really interesting. But I don't think we realized that we were like going towards comedy necessarily. And I mean, we were very into also like heavy model and drama stuff. And I directed plays, won Best Actor at UIL for playing Charlie in Flowers for Algernon.
You still have your Blair Witch Project parody? Still got that on VHS somewhere?
I wish I could find this. I'm sure that it's wildly offensive or really bad, but I would love to see it again.
I haven't played it yet, but the last time I went to my mom's, she had a VHS and it was just record. I guess, you know, it had my handwriting on it and a label that just said Amanda's Tape. And as soon as I can get a VCR up and working, I'm so excited for whatever Amanda's Tape has on it.
Interesting. I wonder what it is.
Yeah, I'll keep you all posted on that because I don't know myself because I don't remember doing it. So There's a lot from childhood that my mom, because she just moved across the country from L.A. to Florida, and so she had a garage full of, like, my stuff that when I moved out, I was like, hold this forever, and then she's like, I'm moving across the country, you need to pick your shit up.
Yeah.
I found all these different, like, artworks, you know, like, high school projects, like, all these things that I can tell I did it because it's my writing, but I don't remember it.
Yeah, I feel like there's so many things like that's such a part of growing up is like you leave a bunch of shit at your parents' house and then like at a certain age they're just like, yeah, I'm gonna get rid of all of this.
I know. And then you're like, mom, you don't want to keep everything and like every assignment I ever did forever? She's like, no, I don't. You don't want it and it's yours.
That's so fun.
All right, so graduate high school and you move to Austin proper. Do you travel anywhere? What are you doing in your life?
Well, after high school, towards the end of high school, I had joined, this is such a long, complicated thing. I was kind of freaking out about being gay, and I came out in high school, but then there wasn't a roadmap, and I was having a hard time with it. And like, though I didn't experience like necessarily a shit ton of bullying, I was still having a really hard time. And so I decided I didn't want to be gay, or I wanted to try not to. And like, kind of, there's also like a lot of cute guys that were going to like this youth group, and like this is definitely how they suck you in. But I started going a lot and like ended up meeting these guys that were in a band. And then I ended up like joining this sort of like this screamo band that was kind of Christian or like, but they were also kind of like bad and like were like scuzzy and drank and smoked and cussed. And after high school, I was in that band for like 4 years and I toured around the country and just stayed really busy.
What was the band called?
At first it was called The Kirby. And then after that it was called Widows and Orphans.
Widows and Orphans. That's dark for a Christian screamo band.
Yeah, we had issues.
And y'all sing. Did you have a record deal or like how were you touring?
Yeah, I mean, we were relatively successful. Widows and Orphans has an album on Spotify that we recorded. We were on Dollhouse Records at first, and then after that we were on Blood. What was that record label called? We had just gotten signed to another record label and we were recording an album. We were signed to a new record label whenever we broke up, and I can't remember what that record label was called. Blood and Ink. I think Blood and Ink Records was the one we were signed to whenever we broke up.
What broke y'all up?
A lot of stuff. Some people weren't into it. Yeah, like some people weren't into it anymore. I was trying to come out. Some people weren't getting along. Some people wanted to move on to like new projects or different stuff, which I mean, I don't think anyone that was in the band makes music anymore. And I think that's kind of telling is like, you know, we liked it. And I think that some of the stuff we made was good. I'm like definitely proud of some of it. But I think that a lot of the people moved on to just having jobs and like families and such. I think I'm the only person in the band that's still performing in some capacity.
So you don't play music at all anymore? That was just a blip in the radar of your life?
I'm not necessarily super proficient at any instrument. Like, I can noodle around the guitar and the piano, and I've, like, bought myself piano lessons in, like, my mid-20s because I wanted to get better. But it never really clicked all the way. So the thing I was doing in the band primarily was singing. And I love to sing, and I like to do music. And if somebody, like, you know, wants to do music or, like, says like, hey, let's go hang out and like mess around with like some songs and stuff, I'm always down, but it's just not like the thing I'm doing.
Yeah, I definitely understand that. You're in Austin. When did you start, like, what got you into stand-up?
I started out with improv, and then after improv I moved on to doing sketch stuff more, and then I kind of just started trying to do stand-up, and it just sort of turned out that I liked all of them.
And what do you like better?
I don't know. I love doing stand-up. I don't know. I like all of them, really. I mean, stand-up is often the easier one because I can do it without worrying about anyone else's schedule or without, like there's a way in which, like, not having to collaborate with somebody is freeing in a way. But I also think that there's a way in which not collaborating with somebody, you know, can, like, there's so much you don't know or you miss about what you're making or like interesting thoughts on it. So even when I'm doing stand up, I'm still constantly collaborating and like talking to Vanessa Gonzalez about like, you know, things that I'm working on or like, so I don't know. Right now, stand up is like the most forward moving for me in storytelling.
Yeah, and that's the, like, because I'm still learning, because I've been doing stand-up now a couple years, and I host a storytelling show, and I have been on a couple storytelling shows myself, because I've been trying to, you know, I think it's such an interesting format. I think it's, you know, stand-up's so tight. It's so, like, you have a structure, you have to make people laugh at certain beats, you have to get them, you know, focused on you, where storytelling doesn't necessarily have to be funny, or doesn't have to be sad, doesn't have to be anything, and it's more of a longer form, and you can go into more details, and you can kind of go on tangents, and then pull your story back in. You can, I don't know, it's more freeing in a way, and so I've been exploring that recently, and I'm very interested in that, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I think that my stand-up in general borders a little bit closer to storytelling than necessarily just, like, bit. Like, I have some jokes that can go for a whole 5 minutes, and there's jokes within them. And I like the just like the flexibility of what comedy can be and like how it can, it doesn't all have to be 100% funny. Some comedy stuff is like pretty serious at times or like processes really heavy things, but I think it's really versatile.
Yeah, and I love when a comic can take something and I've talked about this on other episodes, like Margaret Cho does such an amazing job, and especially, you know, before queer people really had advocates in so many different venues, Margaret Cho in all of her comedy has always made some sort of mention of the queer community and why people should let us get married or not give a fuck if we get married or, you know, just not harass people or whatever. But she'll talk about like her friends that have passed away if that were queer or have, you know, very serious issues, and then she'll bring it right back to a joke. And I think that's such a hard thing to do, but when people do it right, it's so beautiful.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So you were doing improv, then kind of branched into sketch, because you have a podcast yourself. Like what have you done? And I don't know all the things. I feel like every time I talk to you, I'm like, oh, and Michael does, of course he does that. Of course he was in a band. Of course they toured and had a record deal. And of course he started these other shows. And why not?
So right now I don't have a podcast that is running. I did a podcast for, we ran it for 25 episodes called Why Aren't You Screaming with me and Vanessa Gonzalez and Nathan Ehrman. And it was really fun. I'm probably starting another podcast soon, which is going to be in regards to queer film theory and sitting down to talk to different artists that I really like about sort of like the media and films and music videos that were influencing them and like as they were growing up. And I think that one, when I do record it, will probably be like seasonal. So we would like record like 8 to 10 episodes and then take a break and then record 8 to 10 episodes and then take a break of like releasing them. But yeah, what have I done? I've done some podcasts. I used to have another podcast called Faggot Spaceship where I interviewed people and I've been in a couple movies doing all that. I was in a movie called Zero Charisma. That's really, really great. Really wonderful. It's about a guy that's like really obsessed with D&D and gets very hurt whenever sort of like who he thinks of as like a cool nerd or like a nerd interloper comes into his like world. And he's like a hipster nerd rather than like an actual nerd. And he kind of like has like a little bit of a breakdown. And I did that. I was in this movie with Lisa Friedrich, also another comedian, called Meet Me There, which is like a horror movie that we made a couple years ago. Yeah, a couple things. I was in this movie called The Sauce, which is a movie about tech companies, but I don't know if that's out. And I know we completed filming it, but I don't know if it's actually like been released.
See, that's cool. I didn't know you did movies. I told you, I'm like, oh, let me let you talk and let me let you say all the things. And you're like, oh, yeah, of course, movies.
You know, it's nice. I have like an actual IMDb page that I didn't have to put together for myself. And that feels nice.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Currently, right now, you're hosting Greetings from Queer Mountain. And also Queer Film Theory, which you mentioned. Can you talk a bit about that show?
Yeah, Queer Film Theory 101 is like a spinoff of Queer Mountain. John Gross and the people over at Alamo Draft House in Austin reached out to me and they were asking me to develop some programming for them that would be very queer focused. And so I put together a pitch for Queer Film Theory 101, which is essentially sort of a tweak on the storytelling show, where we have 3 or 4 different artists come on to the show and they present some clips or like a slideshow or different information about heteronormative films that were influential on their queer identity or about films that like secretly tell a queer narrative. It's really fun. And we have it running in Austin and New York right now. And basically, yeah, it's just sort of like talking about like, hey, this film that I've always felt was like sort of gay. And this is why I think it is. And so it's like films like Sister Act have been talked about, The Lion King for sure. Just like different sort of like popular movies. A lot of people talk about Spice World as being a gay route for them.
Have you seen that movie?
Yeah, I love Spice World.
When I was younger, like I really wanted to see it, but I was like too embarrassed to want to see it because I think I was like a little like older than I should have been. But I was babysitting and the girls I was babysitting for were like, what movie do you want to watch? And then I kept pushing Spice Girls till they watched it even though they didn't want to watch it. And then I could be like, oh, I watched it, but I was babysitting when I watched it. That movie's so crazy.
I think it's actually a really underrated comedy, kind of, but it's very screwball.
It's like you don't expect, you know, what is it, like aliens, and I don't, you know, I was just like, I thought it would just be this silly Spice Girls movie, and then I was like, they actually had a plot that they tried to work out.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Just like to take some time out to thank our sponsor, Studio. Studio wants to revolutionize the way people see headphones as not just a tech device, but also an accessory. While emphasizing their modern Scandinavian design, they also provide a product that matches the quality of even the highest rated headphones on the market for a fraction of the cost. They provide free worldwide shipping, and with us, with Near and Queer to My Heart, you can get a discount, 15% off any purchase. Near and Queer is your discount code, all one word. Check them out, studio.com. What got you to New York? Like, why New York?
You know, it's one of those hub places that, like, you kind of go to, or, like, I wanted to live here at least once in my life or at some point in my life. But, you know, the person that I'm seeing right now, Sam Sachs, he's an author, and he had moved here, and we were doing long distance for, like, a year. And so whenever it came time to leave Austin, it was just sort of an obvious choice. And I wanted to come here, and I knew that I could set up Queer Mountain and Queer Film Theory here pretty easily. And I was able to do that within, like, the first 2 months of being here. And it was just sort of like a place to be. And now moving to Oakland, it's just sort of another opportunity to be in a place that is, like, sort of steeped in queer history and, like, just really beautiful places that have a lot to offer.
Yeah, I was actually just out. I did a comedy festival in San Francisco, but I stayed in Oakland because it was a lot cheaper to do that. I went to college out there. I miss, it's so beautiful there. I was just walking around. I don't do that in New Orleans. Like I said, I don't walk around there. I actually walked around a little bit. And I was like, oh, I could live here again. And then my friends that still live there that I visited were like, oh, yeah, no, we have a one-bedroom apartment, and it's $1,900 a month. And I was like, okay, New Orleans it is.
Yeah, I think the place that we're staying is going to be, like, $1,700. But that's, like, on the cheap side. And I'm excited.
Yeah, no, people would be like, that is a good deal. Like, when I lived in New York City, I lived in... 1 year I lived on, we had, like, off-campus, I was in school, off-campus apartments, and then the second year I'm like, I have to live, like, in Manhattan, I have to, like, if this is the only time in my life when I could say I did this, I need to do it. So I found an apartment at 53rd and 7th. It was a converted living room that had no windows to the outside, and it included everything. It was $850 a month, and I got it somehow. The guy said he got over 400 emails for this room that had no windows to the outside. So I used to sleep like 14 hours a day sometimes because the sun, you know, even if you don't have your windows open, like you can feel when the sun has set and when it's risen. Like I couldn't feel any of that. So I would just sleep all the time. But I would walk down and two blocks away was Times Square. And so that was, you know, that's what you paid for. But everyone said, oh, $850 a month with including everything. That's so cheap. And, you know, I come to New Orleans and they're like, oh, no, you can get a whole, you know, apartment or a house, like a whole house for that. And then you'll have windows and everything, doors and, you know. I remember one time I woke up at like 3 a.m. and my roommate had been cooking and fell asleep. And so I just woke up to like smoke and then I freaked out because like I'm 18 floors. It's 18 floors up. I have no windows. I have nothing. But luckily, I woke up because I was right there. But it was just kind of a crazy thing. Like that was my life then. But I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I got to experience, you know, New York City. Probably wouldn't move back there and definitely would get windows and spring for that if I could.
Sure. When windows are nice, they're helpful for your well-being and sort of like it's windows are self-care really.
What do you miss most about Austin?
The space. You know, there's a lot of people there, but there's like nowhere near as many as like in New York, and there's just sort of room to move around. And like I think the thing that, like, every time you leave your house in New York, you instantly see, like, 500 people. And I, like, that can be nice sometimes. But I loved that I could, like, walk out my door in Austin and not see anybody for several minutes if I wanted to. And, you know, I think there's a way in New York where, like, if you don't want to be around people, you literally have to just stay in your room.
Yeah, it can get crazy. I can see. So we're FaceTiming right now. I can see some tattoos. I know you're laying in bed. I can see some tattoos on your arms. How many tattoos do you have? And what tattoos?
I have a large chest tattoo. I have, I don't know, probably like 10 tattoos. Not that many, but a fair amount. I guess compared to people that have none, I have a lot.
I see writing on the one on your arm. That's why I was like, I'm trying to read it, but
I have a lot of writing on my lower arms, and yeah, it's just like a whole bunch of like sort of like most of my tattoos I got when I was like 18, 19, and like deep, like sad, trying to figure out how to process being gay, and I was like in this band, and so they're all sort of like sad meditations on life, which is fine, and definitely I don't regret them at all, but it is funny, like they're very maudlin and very like sort of like it's all very like sort of evocative of like the time of my life where I was just sort of like felt like I was completely unable to define who I was.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that that's cool to, you know, because I have 4 tattoos and I got them all at various times in my life where I wanted to remind myself of something. Like I have one on my wrist. It's just a key. And it was after my first breakup. And I wanted to remember that I cannot, like, the key to my happiness is inside me. And it's not like I'm not going to get it from anybody else. So I put the key right on my arm so I could be like, hey, you're the key to your happiness, your future, whatever you want to do. Like somebody else isn't going to be that key.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah, I try to have all these little reminders to myself of like, hey, you did this stupid shit for a while, like stop doing it, and then remind yourself to not do it again in the future. But I think that's interesting that you got your tattoos. I didn't know that you got them like around the, you know, the time you were coming out. What was the big struggle? Was it just like being different from people, or just accepting this thing that's kind of, you know, I don't know.
I think that the struggle for me was it just, I knew it was just going to be more work. And that sounds so, it feels like kind of emotionally lazy when I say it that way, but it's like, I was convinced that being gay was just going to be a real slog, just like a real, like moving through the muck, and it was always going to be an uphill climb. And I think that, you know, if in therapy, I sort of am able to articulate what my issues are around like finding what I want and what I'm able to do. And I'm able to kind of talk about the issue, but that doesn't mean I'm any better at like defining what it is I want or what I like, who I am still. You know, I'm more settled into my personality and like everything, but it's not. I think I was just very afraid and unable to grab a hold of that aspect of my life and move forward with it at the time. And I think that that period of my life has had like lasting repercussions on like how I deal with things now. And I've had to kind of like adjust in like a lot of different ways to unlearn things I learned during that time in my life. I don't know if that made any sense.
Yeah, no, it definitely did. I know for me for a while, I'm like, I just didn't even think, like, I wouldn't even let myself think about it because I'm like, that's just going to mess my, like, that's going to make my life complicated. It's going to be the way people see me all the time. It might make my parents disown me. Like, everything's so scary that I was just like, I'd rather not. And I'll just focus on school and sports and whatever else I was doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was like, it felt like, and you know, now I like that it defines a large element of my life, and I've kind of brought my queerness into all of my shows, and like now it's sort of like it's at the forefront of what I'm doing. But for a long time, that's felt awful. I was one of those people that just was like, I refuse to let this be who I am, and then after I was, that was who I was. I was like, well, it's just an aspect of who I am. It's not who I am. And now, you know, at 32, I'm like yelling, I'm gay, like, and just like walking down the street and like waving it in everyone's face. And it just took a long time to get there.
Yeah. But it feels good, right?
Yeah. I don't know. It's very nice to sort of understand oneself at least that much and sort of like be able to like put things through that filter and that natural filter that you have.
Yeah, no, because coming out for me, like, once I was out and and especially, like, I always say, in the jokes I tell, I say I got lucky, because in some ways I do feel that I got lucky, because I didn't have, everyone in my life supported me, like, I didn't lose anybody in my life, and I do feel very, very blessed, if we're gonna call it that, for that, because I think that might have changed things, but when I came out and nobody gave a shit, pretty much. They're like, all right, that makes sense. Then I just had this new confidence, and I was able to start doing stand-up and, you know, go for jobs and just have this confidence that before, I used to be a shy kid. I used to hide behind my mom. I used to, you know, not really talk or introduce myself, or I would Irish goodbye every chance I had for the, you know, and now I have this, like, confidence in everything I do. I think it all attributes to, like, basically having this secret that I didn't know I had, or that I did know I had, that I didn't know how to deal with, and then just having it out there and just, you know, being done with the hiding.
Yeah, and that's, like, kind of, you know, I mean, now that's sort of become the whole point of Queer Mountain for me, is sort of, like, this very, not only are we not hiding who we are, we're going to tell you intimate details of stories in our lives and, like, kind of share it with a community, and I think that's so important. That's sort of why I want there to be a Queer Mountain in, you know, every major city, and so there's a place that people can go to hear other queer people tell stories, or, like, to tell stories themselves, and it feels very necessary, because I feel like so often our stories are either repackaged by straight people or to sell, or they're just removed and not part of the narrative at all. I mean, even today, our primary source of, like, queerness on TV is what, like, RuPaul's Drag Race, Will and Grace, and Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. And there's not really anything real in any of those. Like, you know, there's an element where, like, you can say very positive things about Drag Race, but you can also say really negative ones, and it's also, like, a little exploitive in a way. And then, like, you know, Will and Grace is primarily written and produced by straight people, and, you know, again, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy is another one where it's just sort of like, it's a character, it's sort of like a big production of being gay. And I think that it's really important to just hear stories from people and just have hear it from the queer horse's mouth, if you will.
So in the one in New Orleans, what I tell performers, or when I'm asking performers, or when people are asking me to perform for Greetings from Queer Mountain, I make sure that they identify as queer. And I don't ask them, like, how, what type of queer, any of that. I need them to identify as queer in some way, shape, or form in order to perform. Is that something that you've carried in Austin and New York and will carry in San Francisco Bay Area? Or do you have another process for that? Or is, you know, how do you see that stage?
I try not to, like, you know, audit someone's experience, for sure. But I do, like, I mean, I think people understand what it is. And, like, you know, so we don't have straight people on the show. We've had people on that want to talk about their experience with queerness that have never had a queer relationship. And some people would argue that that isn't queer, which I kind of disagree with, because, like, we've had people come on to talk about, like, sort of their experience with their identity, or with, like, their fantasies, or with sort of, like, what was going on internally with themselves that they weren't able to actualize in their lives. So I've definitely had, like, some friends come on that have always identified as being bisexual but have not been in a bisexual relationship or pursued it. And a lot of people will be like, that's just to be cool. And I'm like, I understand what you're saying, but I think that with these specific people, it's more nuanced with that than that. And I think that, like, leaving room for people's queerness to be vast and different is important. But I mean, I don't know, everyone has different feelings about it. And I think that what I try to do is I try to not have two people on each show that have too similar of an experience or, like, a cultural background. And so, you know, keeping it very diverse, I try not to book more than two, you know, cis white men. Try to, like, think about ability and age whenever I'm booking, which is harder sometimes because there's not a lot of performers are normally on the younger side. But then I try to, like, I try to make sure that we're acknowledging, you know, all of the letters of the acronym and bringing on, like, you know, trans people and GNC, like, gender nonconforming people, and asexual people. Some of my favorite times on the show is having sort of a person that identifies as asexual or aromantic talking about what their experience is, and, like, sort of, like, letting people know that I'm, like, I'm not lonely, I'm not sad, I'm not, like, a broken person. I just am asexual or aromantic, and I have no interest in romantic love or companionship in that way, and I'm okay. And having someone come up and talk about that in a way that was like easy to understand, I felt like was so important, because that's an aspect of queerness that I really didn't understand.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I like to, like, when I have performers that say something and I'm like, I didn't think about that, or like, I didn't know about that experience. And that's amazing. We've gotten some, like, not backlash, but I've gotten a few messages or people talk to me after shows when we have someone who identifies as pansexual or bisexual, or in some way where they do have at times heteronormative relationships, you know, like specifically one woman who identifies as bisexual and she's currently dating a cisgendered man. And told a story. The story wasn't about their relationship specifically, but it did mention that she had a boyfriend. And I got like a couple messages after that about like, why'd you have her on the show? And so now sometimes on shows, in my little intro, I will say like, it's, you know, this is a queer stage and there are folks who identify in different ways, you know. And then I kind of go back and forth of like, do I need this disclaimer? Or am I just like too scared? Because I should just be like, hey, if people want to talk to me, I'm glad they feel free. Glad that if people have concerns or thoughts or, you know, anything about the show, that they do feel comfortable enough to share with me. But do I need a preface? Do I need an explanation? Or I don't know. I was just wondering if you've dealt with that or had any thoughts on that.
I mean, yeah, we've had issues for sure that have come up. On your front, I mean, I think that gatekeeping is very dangerous. And I understand why gatekeeping happens sometimes. And, you know, you want to know that someone's legit and you don't want someone to be sort of a tourist in queer spaces that are built for like people to feel safe and comfortable. But at the same time, I can speak to this, and I'm speaking from this from like a point of relative privilege as like a cis white man. But I think that when we can invite people into our spaces and we're not like really stringent about like, are you experiencing the exact same thing I'm experiencing? I think it's wonderful to like leave that door open and be like, because I mean, biphobia and being critical of bisexual people or people that experience their queerness and like a less strict box way, I think those people get shit all the time and it makes them want to express that side of themselves less and less. And I think that's what creates a lot of like, you know, closeted people, is that they're like, I felt like I wouldn't be welcome in any of these queer spaces because I wasn't queer enough or I wasn't like checking all the boxes. And I think that's a problem. Now, granted, you know, if these people don't want or like didn't like the story, cool. Or if these people felt complicated about it, they should probably speak to the speaker. We have this weird thing where, especially in the queer community, we kind of pull like this, like, I want to speak to the manager thing a lot. And I understand it. But like the people that run shows, whenever we invite other people on the show, we cannot control every element of who they are. And it would be creepy if we could. And if someone on the show says something really fucked up, we can always not have them back. But we can't vet up and down every single thing that someone's going to talk about. And it's a weird way to run a show where it's too stringent. Now, I mean, you've seen before, like I have, like we put together that Queer Mountain sort of like safety policy that we like, you know, we ask our people to avoid, you know, sex shaming and body shaming and all of these different things. And we kind of like give our performers that beforehand. But really, that's the only thing you can do about it. I think that otherwise we have to leave an open door to different people with different experiences and different ways of speaking about their experiences. Because it's not up to all of us as an audience member or as a host to define exactly how someone lives and how they're going to talk about it. And I guess like I've definitely in New York, I've definitely had issues with the way that people have said things before come up, and I try to address them. But I think that something we always need to keep in mind in these sort of shows is make sure that whenever we're critiquing the way that someone speaks or criticizing it or talking about like that made me uncomfortable, we often, I think, have to make sure we're not coming from a place also of privilege or coming from a place of whiteness or coming from a place of expecting someone to handle themselves with a certain amount of like respectability, because I think that people come from different places and people say things about their lives in different ways, and you should feel comfortable talking to them about it, but be careful sometimes whenever you're like all of a sudden deciding that you're like, fuck this person, I didn't like what they said. And it's like, you, I think sometimes we can come into those situations being deeply in the wrong, and I think people need to remember that.
Yeah, definitely. And I always tell people, and it's true, I don't ask the performers, you know, I give them no parameters as far as what their story, I don't like interview, hey, what's your story, and have them like write it out. But I want them to be as free. You know, I tell them the only parameter they really have is that we do have a time limit. They can't go on all day. But I really want people to be open in that space and to feel like they can share everything. And so I think, yeah, I agree. Like, I don't want to be a gatekeeper, but I get in that because I want to make sure that the person who's sharing their life, you know, they're getting up there, and we've had some very deep things share that I want that person to feel comfortable in that space doing that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that everyone has a right to feel safe and feel like they can come to a safe place. But I think that sometimes something will hit a nerve or something will offend you. And I think that sometimes, yes, a storyteller can say something very inappropriate or shitty, and we can address that. But I think that people, when possible, you know, I want us to be creating spaces where people feel comfortable talking to a storyteller about something that, you know, made them uncomfortable. And I'm glad that people feel comfortable talking to us about it. But I think that we need to stop looking at things as like, we got to fix this person, or we got to, like, this person absolutely has to know that what they said made me feel this way, whenever we can approach it in another way where it's like, I want to let this person know, or I want to let these people know that this affected me. And I know that there's not necessarily a solution for it, but I want us to talk about it. And I think that's very different, because I think that sometimes I don't like it whenever it becomes, I want to speak with the manager. You know, I want it to be like, I want you to know, or I want to let you know that this happened, rather than like, what are you going to do about my feelings? And because sometimes it's like, I don't know what I'm going to do about, there's so little that I can do about your feelings, except for say, I'm sorry that you felt strangely about this. You know, I'll keep it in mind, and like, I'm open to talking about it.
Yeah, well, thank you, Michael, so much for talking with us. Where can we find you? Where can people know more about Michael?
Michael Folk, MichaelFoulk. That's my Twitter handle, my Instagram handle. My website is michaelfolk.com. And then you can check out more about all the queer shows at greetingsfromqueermountain.com. Those are both Squarespace websites. Squarespace, thank you. And yeah, I'm all over the place.
Michael, thank you so much for being here.
All right. Love you. Proud of you. Goodbye.
Up next is one of my really good friends. He hosts a monthly show, Greetings from Queer Mountain, at Housing Works. So give it up for Michael Folk.
Keep it going for everyone you've seen so far. And also, keep it going for the lumens in this room. Damn. Y'all know about lumens? It's a measurement of light. I got perfect lumens. Some people got perfect pitch. These are about 870, just so you know. Just letting you know. It's really good lumen. I'm gay. Aggressively so. I had a traditional upbringing, though. I grew up in Central Texas. And then I started sleeping with older men, and I freaked out. And then I joined a Christian metal band, as you do. And now I'm the noisiest bottom in Brooklyn. It's a real eat, pray, love sort of storyline. I'm at the eating part. It doesn't have to be in the same order. I am a little new to Brooklyn. I'm new to New York. I did experience my first New York bigot. So I live here. I was out walking with my boyfriend, and we were doing our favorite thing to do after meals. This is my gift to you. In order to get through the hard city life, what you do is, when you're walking around, every time you see a dog, you give it a first and a last name and a job. It's so much fucking fun, y'all. City's hard. Give those dog jobs. It's really good. So we were just out employing dogs left and right, just sort of being like this, going through the city. And as we were stepping off of the crosswalk onto the sidewalk, as one does, an SUV full of bros drove by, and this guy leaned out the window and screamed, "Can you walk any slower, faggots?" And of course I went, "Oh." And then I thought, yeah. What do you mean? I can walk a myriad speeds. Do you think gay people only have the one setting? We have one pace that we can move? No, we have generous gait, slow gait. We can walk like this. Oh my God. And then I also thought, bigotry's weird when it's combined with a question, no? Because maybe they're just looking to be educated. Maybe that guy was like, you know what? I'm pretty fucking ignorant. I wonder if these faggots can walk slow or not. Also, you know, you could just call me faggot. I'll get a boner either way. It was hot for me. I do have a boyfriend now, bragging. But when I was younger, I had really bad taste in men. In my early 20s, if I can describe my taste in any way, okay, you know the Olympics, right? Okay, and so at the Olympics, they build the Olympic Village, and it's like this big deal, and then, but then the Olympics leave, and then the Olympic Village kind of goes to seed, and nature takes back over. That's my type of guy in my 20s. Like, I liked a guy where it looked like something really special happened there a long time ago. Right? Like, you can still see it, but you're like, damn, what happened? That was my ideal man. I liked it to be like, if I unzipped a man's pants, a raccoon was gonna jump out. So that was what I was into. Not anymore so much. I have a really cool boyfriend. I finally kind of found a boyfriend who was smart and jacked, like my original crush, Donatello. Of the New York Ninja Turtles. Not the Renaissance artist. You know. Donatello, I know, I get it. Like, he's an anthropomorphized cartoon turtle. Get off my back! He was jacked, though. His body was slamming, okay? You normally have to choose between jacked and smart, not with Donatello. Like, he takes care of his body, yaddy yaddy, but he also knows how to, like, invent a drone that delivers pizza. It's pretty cool. Also, there's a lot of reasons not to date the other Ninja Turtles. First off, I'm not in my splinter phase yet. I'll get there. I know myself. At some point in my life, I will have sex with an old rat in the sewer. I don't have illusions of grandeur. I know where I'm gonna end up. Also, I don't know, like, Raphael is more like the kind of guy that you do date in your 20s. Like, he's jacked, but he always forgets your safe word, even though it's cowabunga. You're an asshole. You say it with your friends all the time. Leonardo's the kind of guy that wants to schedule sex, and he calls it training. Super bossy. I don't want to train at 5, Leo. It's got to be spontaneous. Michelangelo, he's silly. He's like eating your butt and then he blows a raspberry on it. What a loser. Nobody wants a raspberry blown on their butt. Just kidding, you do. It feels amazing, okay? It's 2018 and the world is on fire. Get into analingus before it's punishable by death. Look to your left, look to your right, let one of these people eat your butt tonight. I'm a poet, I'm sorry. I gotta get out of here, but I do want to leave you with this. I am trying to take care of my body because the world is cruel, and I've been eating more Greek yogurt. That shit's just lotion, right? And the wool has been pulled over our collective eyes. It's just some sunscreen in a jug. Think about it, sheeple. I'm Michael Folk. Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in. And thank you to our sponsor, Studio. Thank you to our guest, Michael Folk, for sharing his world with you. Special thanks to Jessa Fallon and Ryan Golub for your help editing and producing the show. Thanks to all our friends and supporters. You can catch Greetings from Queer Mountain live in New Orleans, Austin, and New York City. Check out our Facebook page for more information. Find us on Facebook, Near and Queer to My Heart, or Instagram, Near and Queer to My Heart. Thank you all. Good night, or goodbye, or good morning.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.